Do-do-do-do-do-do, Back Row Super Show, do-do-do-do-do-do, this is a show, two guys sitting together hanging out, super, it's a show, yeah.
Please tell me that that's going to be our intro.
That's going to be something. I'm thinking that's just the beginning. We'll do, we'll have our little song and dance numbers beforehand. All right, guys, this is podcast number 9. Yet again, filling our bag. So when we drop all 9 of these, possibly more on the internet at once, we're going to blow up the internet.
Oh, we're going to drop them all at once.
It's going to be have a huge. No, okay. We're just going to drop them all down and just let people dissect our masterpieces. It's going to be the hottest podcast album drop ever. All right, so we're going to do, what are we doing today, Zach?
Zombie movies.
Zombies.
Send more paramedics. Brains.
Yeah.
I don't have that cool, like, echo sound effect that's in that film. And that film was?
Return of the Living Dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Not actually George Romero's creation.
Very weird film. A lot of interesting ideas, I think, for zombies in that film. And I almost felt like it was... I know there's like a part 2 that I have never seen.
Yeah, me neither.
But it almost feels like that original one was like... They were just going to kind of throw all their... I guess throw all their eggs in the basket once because they're like, hey, guys, this is almost like a... It felt like a one-off. Like, they were just like, we're not going to, like, save anything.
Right.
We're not holding anything back. Like, we're just going to, like, blow up this fucking town, you know, at the end. Hey, guys, towns get blown up.
It's part this of, entire world is just fucked now.
Yeah. And yeah. It's like, everything's screwed over. And I appreciate that, you know, because it's hard not to meet a film... Now going to the theaters that doesn't like hedge its bets for, oh, maybe we can do like a sequel or like a universe thing.
Right.
So it's like, let's make sure we leave that open-ended. And no, they were just like, hey, guys, this is a fun film. We're just going to like blow this
shit
up.
Is it the same production company?
Between 1 and 2?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Oh, okay.
But I imagine the first one was probably successful enough because it was fun.
Sure.
That they were going to do a part 2. I can't think of that... The second one from the little that I've seen where it was like a passion project kind of idea where someone was like, yeah, we got more of this story to tell, more of this world we need to get out there.
More naked chicks dancing on graves.
I mean, I would have taken that. That was, I don't think that was part of the second film.
There's plenty of sites that can cater to your desire.
Yeah, but I mean, it just comes out of nowhere in that film. It's so good.
Yeah.
So, we're going to talk about zombies, some different flavors. We're just going to try to have fun with it.
Yeah. A little bit more laid back as we kind of get more comfortable doing these. But to talk about something that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So, E3 has happened recently, so that should give you an idea of when we're recording this. June 12th of 2017. You'll probably hear it way later than that.
This is actually from 2020. we're time travelers.
Hello, future.
Yes, hello, future. Fallout 7 was awesome, wasn't it? It was great.
Not quite as good as the new Mega
bad
Man.
Todd Howard had to die right before it was released. That freak house fire? Who would have thought? Anyways, enough of that. Todd, I love you. You're great.
So one of the trailers that dropped at E3 was the Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus trailer, which... I talked about playing the first 2 reboots.
Oh, boy, did he. Yeah.
Wolfenstein games. They're fun. I mean, they're not memorable, but they're over the top and goofy.
Which I think it's funny, like, just watching that trailer. It feels like they're trying to inch their way into, like, AAA kind of games environment.
Yeah.
Like, you have set up a whole world. You got, like, big expansive areas. And that's, that's a really... heavy market to try to break into with
Call of Duty and all of
what is that, what's that show that was on I think it's on Amazon, and it's about if the Nazis had won.
Oh, Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, there was like a Man in a High Castle kind of flavor to like the New World, which is That would be cool.
It's a really cool story. The problem, as always, someone found something offensive, right? This time, the alt-right apparently has taken issue with there being a resistance member who is both a woman and also African-American, and she has the gall to call BJ Blazkowicz a white boy. You dumb fucking mouth breathers. What the fuck is wrong with you? I was reading this article, and basically the gist of it was bottling all gamers into the alt-right, like, poison or whatever, saying, this is where 2017 is. Gamers are defending white supremacists. No. That is a section of Reddit, and that is a section of 4chan, the B-board specifically, and probably the alt-right, maybe even the Red Pill communities. I don't know. They didn't source the posts that they had taken, or screenshots of comments and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are comments from Reddit users saying that they don't agree with the reverse racism in it. In the same argument, though, calling Bethesda a bunch of Jew bastards. So, what the fuck is wrong with you?
That just adds weight to your argument when you call someone a Jew bastard, obviously.
What is wrong with you people? You can't... I'm flabbergasted.
Well, Zach just said you people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, defend that, Zach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure someone will take this out of context. But no, seriously, though, you can't... I don't know. It's so irritating that everyone is getting lumped in with racist and morons. I mean, one of the shared comments that was screenshotted. Like, I mean, I know that can be faked or whatever, but it wasn't quoted, but it was screenshotted. And the guy was taking the trouble to separate. Now, you know, neo-Nazis and KKK, they don't believe the same thing as Nazis, so they're just lumping. It's like, no, that doesn't defend the ideology. It's all based on the same thing. Yeah. What is wrong with you?
Oh, I mean, totally, yeah. Like, if the Nazis had won and they had come and met the KKK, there's no way, like, they would have had any common ground at all whatsoever.
Yeah, great. But no, like, I mean, the game looks interesting. I'll probably play it. Like, this also, I think, circles back around to what I always say. Everyone's entitled to like their shitty media. If you don't like whatever media it is, don't partake on it. If you and your racist ass are offended by Wolfenstein on presumably the PS4 or the Xbox, don't play it. Play a Doom 2 mod where you're killing whatever. Like, don't, come on. Like, if you don't like it, don't play it. Don't ruin it for everyone else. You stupid fucking people.
So good, so good. I mean, you don't even really have to doctor anything that you would make on 4chan. You just wait. You post something, and then you just wait for the comment that you need to screenshot, and it'll come. You put the bait there, it will come.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, you put a picture up of Tay-Tay, Taylor Swift, that you think is amazing. It's like, hey, look at this hot chick. You just wait for the misogynistic woman bashing to come, and like the hate mongering about powerful women and how they're all like secretly like giant slut bags. You just wait, and then you get to screenshot it and put it on your website and be like, hey, yeah, gamers, they're just all... they're woman-hating dudes.
Well, and before we started recording, when I was talking with you, one of the things I said earlier, one of the things that irritates me more than anything else is censorship. So this is not... part of my anger is also not in... like, I don't want them to be censored, but on the same hand, they're not at a level where, like, a Mel Gibson leaving an angry, racist, homophobic phone call or whatever, right? they're not public figures. They're just anonymous people online. So it's the worst form of cowardice.
Yeah.
Like it's like shouting a racial slur and then shutting the door and leaving the country. Like there's no repercussion for you doing that. Like it's the same thing with trolls in a Call of Duty match. Like they can shout things at you through the headset because you don't know where they are. There's no retribution that will come to them.
Yeah.
Everyone's free to say whatever they want, but there are consequences to some of the things you say sometimes.
Yeah.
And you need to be ready for them. Unfortunately, the internet just makes it anonymous. So there's no comeuppance for someone being a stupid dick.
Yeah. You know, and most of the posts you see on like a 4chan or, you know, the B-boards or anywhere else, there are just anonymous.
Yeah.
Like they have just a timestamp and then that's just what they post and that's it. They're just an idea for whatever reason. Like initially I thought it was, for me, when 4chan came into prominence, it was hipper young people and then like really young people that were just kind of
Weeby anime fans
Weeby anime fans, but also like people that were on the cusp of like what was new in internet communication.
Yeah.
So 4chan provided a forum where it was just like, yeah, you just say what you want to say and people contribute, respond, and that's it. Like there's no, you don't really have to invest in an account and like have a identity. You just make a statement and it can be outrageous. And so there was that freedom, and then you provide a platform, you know, that doesn't really have any kind of moderation. And then I think eventually you get subcultures that spring up there, and they just, that's where they talk, and other people will get to talk. And, you know, if you're the only person in a room, you know, shouting, like, racist ideologies and denigrating a majority of the world's population.
Yeah.
And you're the only one doing that, and everyone's looking at you really weird, and there's no one chiming in. They're like, dude, you need to shut up or get out of the room. Then you don't keep on talking. But if you find a forum or a platform and you start saying that, and other guy's like, yeah, totally, absolutely. And, you know, now you have, you know, the power of these idiots to be connected, and they can get validation. They can get into what's equates to like an internet room,
yeah.
And one person can say something, and then they can get validated their views by somebody else, and so then that creates like a community, like a group. They start coalescing.
Sure, like it's just this growing cesspool.
Yeah,
I mean, but I don't know. It just frustrates me so much because, like, you know. Too, with 4chan and some of the subreddits and some of the more darker senses of humor, trolls, what have you, you can't tell who is doing this because it's offensive and in their attempt to be a shitty edgelord, and who honestly believes this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's just, I don't know. The whole thing is disgusting and I'm frustrated as hell. I'm mad as hell!
Yeah,
oh man, that's a movie we should look into at some point. Network?
Network? Have you
ever seen it? Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's a man imploding on air. It's pretty fucking great. Sidney Lumet or Lumet?
Is that the one where his head explodes?
No, that's Scanners.
Scanners. Okay.
Yeah.
Man imploding. I thought he meant literally.
No, like he's a TV broadcaster and his friend gets fired and he just loses it on air, and he just calls people on their bullshit, and he's frustrated. And you know, I'm angry and I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Great.
Anyway, though. Yeah.
So, yeah, basically, in summation, you know, the internet, there's a lot of cesspools. It's a big swamp.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beautiful herons. There's some really prickly alligators. There's also some really shitty cesspools.
Yeah.
Don't fall into them, guys. And I feel like I have enough experience, at least for myself, where based on the formatting and just kind of when people start indicating their ideas or their views, like I feel like there are a lot of people online who have like just no picture or like one random picture YouTube accounts or Reddit accounts, and et cetera. And they spend a good amount of their time just like flaming and trolling people. Like they'll wait till someone says something, they'll make a comment on it, and then they just want to see that person get angry. And then they just have like a rebuttal to it. And it's like a pastime for them. It's not actually like a thing where they're super invested in those ideas. Like maybe they, like part of them does have, you know, that's a, they are a vessel for those ideas. But a lot of it is they just like doing it. There was this one guy, I was reading one of those ask whatever articles, like in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Like ask Kathy, ask whatever. And so this woman said that she'd just gotten with this guy, and I think they had been in a relationship for a little while, and she says, like, it's a great dude, you know, a family person, etc. But she'd noticed one day that he'd left, like, his accounts open and stuff online on their computer. They shared, and she went to look, and he just likes to go around for, like, Instagram and, like, Twitter and, like, YouTube, and he just liked flaming, like, fat people. Like, people that were posting, Jesus. Like, they were posting, like, pictures of them, like, trying to work out and get healthy, and he would just post, like, you're fat, you'll always be fat, kill yourself and die. And he would just, like, do this for hours.
Jesus Christ.
And she's, like, she said she couldn't, like, come to terms with the fact that this person that she knew that was, like, a polite, pretty nice person would just go online and just do that. And she tried to talk to him about it, and he's like, well, it's just, like, a form of stress relief. Like, I just sometimes have a bad day, and I just get out there, and I just...
Just make fun of fat people?
Yeah, I just feel like telling these fat chicks that they're ugly
great.
And they're stupid. And she's like, you know, like, those are people out there, like, that you're... You know, that you're making all these hateful comments towards.
Yeah, they're not. They're just and then he's
like,
online.
He's like, well, you know, it really doesn't feel like they're people. Like, they're just these things on the computer. You know, that just doesn't feel like real.
See, people like that, yeah, like they shouldn't be allowed to communicate with anyone. Like, they have proven themselves to be thoroughly incapable of being a decent goddamn person of their own volition.
Yeah, and that's so crazy. That's so crazy. Like, yeah. I was just so blowed. Like, that woman was me in that moment.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, what do I do with this person who is secretly a horrible person? Like, that it just has, like, this online level of, like, sociopath. Like, normal interactions, he's got to own up to his shit. But once he goes online, he's just like, yeah, nothing's real. Yeah, I'm just going to do what I want.
See, and, like, the thing is that there are so many people that are just like, yeah, like... It's just an open season on anyone who is not me because mm-hmm. they don't matter. Like, there's no connection. And it's just like, well, I mean, yes, it's obviously too far to say they should not be allowed access to the mm-hmm. internet. But there should be some form of punishment if you're caught doing things like, I mean, I know it's ridiculous to be like, don't be mean to people, but it's like, society's conventions are not keeping you from being a decent person. Like, yeah. You're just a sociopathic asshole.
Which is, it's weird. Like, I also saw briefly on Facebook, this girl had posted this cosplay that she'd done. She did D.Va, which is a character from Overwatch. And she happens to be an African-American woman. Like, she's a black woman.
Oh, no.
And she's great cosplay. I liked her costume. I liked her setup. She looked cool. I thought she looked awesome. And then she posted about, like, all the comments she had where, like, dudes were just like, yeah, but why are you black? And I'm like, what, really? Like, it's cosplay, guys. Like, listen, you don't have to match, like, the height. You don't have to match the weight requirements. Like, you're just doing this for fun. Like, yeah. She doesn't have to be, like, some Korean chick. Which, by the way, she's not white, okay? That's not D.Va. That's not the character.
Yeah.
She's Korean. Like, you guys think she's white, but no. And so, it's like if you played...
Read the goddamn bio.
Yeah, if it's like if you played Zarya, who's also a female character in the game, you don't have to be Russian. Like, your hair doesn't even have to be pink. You know? Or if you played Zenyatta's cosplay, he's a fucking robot. Do you have to be a robot to play Zenyatta? No, motherfucker. No, that's not how that works. And, you know, people are just, they're just shit. Some people are just shit online.
Yeah.
And I imagine they are shit in real person, too. They just, they put a little more effort into hiding it, or maybe they have no friends. I don't know.
So the subtext of your story then right there was that you're going to dress up as Wonder Woman at Dragon Con this next year. Okay, great.
And Hannah's going to be, what's his name?
Superman?
No, no, she's going to be Wonder Woman's interest, Mr. Chris Pine.
Yeah.
Chris Pine's
character. I
forget
his name. Yeah. He was very memorable. But, you know.
He was cute. He was cool. I like him. I just don't remember what his name was.
Yeah, I have this friend that I think every Halloween, or maybe it's just the past couple of Halloweens I've seen them, the guy dresses up like Slave Leia and his girlfriend dresses up like Han Solo, and I think it's goddamn fantastic.
That's great.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, you could just like put those like in a slideshow, the progression of my man boobs, you know, as you move along. It's great. All right, so that's...
So, that was enough of my angry rant. That's what, like 20 minutes? Jesus Christ, I did not mean to take up that much time. So let's just go on to me. Why don't you do your me, and I'll follow up.
Sure,
we can talk about zombies.
Yeah, basically, I saw Baywatch.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give a different yeah than Zach. So it was cool. I thought it was a fun popcorn movie.
I want to watch it once a week for the rest of my goddamn life.
You know, we can get you a room where you can do that safe from other people, where they don't have to be exposed to the watch of Bay. And it was a movie. You went into the theaters, you sat down, and then a stream of moving images played in front of your face. And it was funny in some bits, but it was... It at least didn't feel like super canned. Like I'd say the stream of movies that came after, what is it?
Oh, like the Chips and Dukes of Hazzard and like those old like junk TV reboots.
Yeah, it didn't feel super canned. There were some segments where they were just like standing around talking.
Yeah.
And that initial, what was that? That initial joke about the guy getting his junk caught in the table. That is seriously like, that was like, it felt like it was 12 minutes, like from the beginning of the film. And I was like, you super committed to this
well,
prop game.
You know what's funny is my wife and I were talking on the way home from the theater, and I was just like, that was actually a decent length movie. Like, it was over 2 hours, right? Do you remember seeing Underworld Blood Wars, where there's like this whole mythology and previous sequels and a world built and stuff, and a world that they just straight ripped out of World of Darkness, the role-playing game? That movie was like 80 minutes. Like it was barely an hour and a half at the very most. Baywatch being over 2 hours, that was awesome. And I did not like the show when it was on TV. Like I'm pretty sure I watched a couple of episodes. But
I think I would like see that it was on and... I'd see like the beginning segment where all the chicks were like running in slow-mo. But
then you became a man?
No. And then I was like, I don't really get the premise of this show. And then I would change the channel. Like seriously.
Slow motion jiggling.
Yeah. That was like, I was like, why are they all running in slow motion?
Yeah.
Like I just didn't get it. I mean, I don't know. Maybe like none of the women that were then like there in prominence are really my thing. I'm not really into like.
Yeah. I don't really
blonde
like
bombshells.
Like Pamela Anderson. Nicole Eggert types. So. Yeah.
Like it just feels kind of weird. And then if I had ever ventured to go back to the show and like watch like some of the storyline, dialogue and acting, like that definitely wasn't hooking me in. If the slow-mo jiggles weren't getting me.
Well, I think that was the point in the ridiculousness of the movie is like, I mean, it seems very much like it could have been a story arc on the original show.
Yeah. I mean, guys, they were like, this is the material we're working with. Like, we're not going to treat this like Shakespeare. We're just going to have fun with it.
Well, so it's been out a good month now, I think, probably. Yeah. It's barely made back its budget. Like, I think I was looking, it was like $69 million budget, and they've got like $86 million back. So, you know, respectable, but I don't know how much they spent on marketing. One of the things I thought was interesting, though, is that with the two Chinese companies producing it, I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed a lot of, like, extras just standing around in the background, and I was just like, I bet that's a producer's niece. Or, like, there were an inordinate amount of Asian actors, which is good, but I was, and maybe I was just, like, super...
You were just, like lit up to, like, start looking for that once you saw, like, the big production title credits, and you were like, yeah. Your brain was just, like, already just, like, ready, primed for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Like, if everyone had died except The Rock, and then they were all basically, for no solid storyline reason, replaced with Asian actors, Zach would have been like, I knew it. I knew this was going to happen.
Well, it's funny. The opening, like, title sequence looks like a ridiculous, over-the-top, like, Chinese action comedy.
Yeah. It's weird. Visually,
the CG was very much, it looked like East Asian cinema CG levels. Like, it was really surreal to watch it and go, this is a big budget American movie?
Yeah. Didn't feel like it. It was it was very, very odd. It didn't fail in, I guess, for what it was trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it had a very particular kind of point to it. Even with, like, the trailers and stuff, like, communicating particular jokes, like, you understood the style, you know, you understood what kind of movie this was. I can't imagine anybody being like, yeah, this is Baywatch, they're just going to blow the doors open on, like, storytelling and character building.
Well, no, I like how they're listing off scenarios that the Baywatch people have involved themselves in, and Zac Efron's character... And they're quite, like, what do you do in this situation, smart guy, huh? Uh-huh. What do you do when these drug dealers are just bringing in stuff into the bay? And he's like, you call the cops? We're lifeguards. Like, what the fuck are you doing? I love that.
I love how he committed to that, too. It wasn't just, like, one scene. Like, for a good portion of the movie, he's like, guys, I don't get what you're doing. Like, I'm not going to stand watch. I'm just going to drink some really nice whiskey here.
Well, like, when... They're in the autopsy room, and Alexandra Daddario's character, who at this point is established as, like, she's a student, but, like, they never say of what, right? They're talking about how the guy broke so many vertebrae in his neck, and she's just like, you could swan dive down a flight of stairs and not break that, man. It's like, how the fuck would you know that? Like, are you a med student? Like, what?
Yeah, I think later they mentioned she's, like, biomed or some shit like that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
See, I missed that. I must have, like, been getting a refill or something. Yeah,
it was probably during your pee break.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, an aside. I think they were, like, looking at a case and, like, you're a biomed student, right? Take a look at these files. So that's Baywatch. Let's not swim around in that too long. So then we watch Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Which was great.
So good. I don't need Justice League. Like, I saw a reviewer who was just like, I just need Wonder Woman 2, 3, 4, 5. You can just keep making them.
Yeah.
And I agree. That was really good.
That was cool. I've seen a couple reviewers online go through it and provide some good points. I mean, because Wonder Woman in this rendition of the character, you know, put to film, she's very naive. You know, she doesn't know a lot about the outside world. And, I mean, that's a really endearing aspect of the character.
Yeah.
And so then you have, like, that that fragility. And then you have her just kind of, like, being a badass on the other side of it. And it's just a really nice combination. If someone was just, like, a badass, just, like, off the bat, but they don't really have anything relatable, then you're just watching someone blow shit up on screen. Which can be cool. It doesn't really make for, like, very convincing characterization.
Yeah.
And you don't really care about the character, you know. They get into a big fight at the end of the movie. It's like, meh, so what? I don't care.
Well, one of the things, and I think we talked about this during lunch after the movie, one of the things I really was surprised at when I went in is based, like, you know, in the trailers, and they may be working with earlier drafts of CG animation. But the trailers, all of the action scenes, the CG looks kind of ridiculous. And it's just like, okay, so it's just going to be another DC movie where it's just off the rails crazy. I'm buying this ticket. I'll take this ride, mm-hmm. right? In the context of the movie, all of those action scenes, the cinematography and the CG that went into them, when they were put back in context of its flow in the movie, the cinematography, in my opinion, matches the way your eyes move across a comic panel, which is why it looks weird if you're watching a trailer and you have 2 seconds of what should be a traditional cinematographical
presentation.
I think that was really, really good. And even the fight scene at the end where like the background is all blurred out,
mm-hmm.
that looked like a comic panel to me. Like it removed extraneous things that would draw your eyes away from the character that's mm-hmm. speaking or taking up most of the frame. I really thought that the CG in this was extremely well done, unlike Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman.
It was definitely very dynamic, which is kind of like the way you want to set that up visually. It's kind of hard for things to have an impact, but you have to, when you have like action scenes like that and you have someone who is so powerful, like you don't get a chance to a lot of times to really watch like a character start at one point and then have to like carefully move through so you can build up like tension, because they're just so powerful. They can just like barrel through different kind of scenes. So visually you have to communicate like a scene in a way that like has tension. And then when you get to an action point, like there's a release of that tension. And then visually, like that's interesting the way that occurred. And then you have to capture someone's attention again. Like a lot of an action scene is like a dynamic set of like explosions. Like it's almost like fireworks, I guess I'd say. You know, you can't blow your whole load on fireworks all at once. Like there's just too much to pay attention to. And so you can sit there and it can last like 10 seconds and you're like, okay, was that it? Part of the great thing about fireworks is you're watching, you see like some huge like whirling firework and then it like and then you have to wait like 10 seconds more. And the sky just stops, you know, and you have to wait for the next one. And so there's that anticipation. There's that waiting. And then, you know, and then because you get that buildup, that natural dynamic buildup,
right?
Like there's just that release. And so I think like you were saying, like a lot of the motion felt like a panel, and then like she would walk up to an area, like you'd see the tension. She'd bust through, you know, and then the camera would pan to the side. And you'd see like a like someone hit her with like a piece of wood or something, and it like snapped against her. And it was like, then you'd see her like move forward, and then it would like slow mo to her doing like this, you know, this kind of trip kick thing. And it had a real understanding of that, the dynamic kind of.
Well, like the last movie that I've seen that worked like that, that framed shots as if they were in a comic, was Sin City. And that was just ham-handed over the top, like, this is a comic book movie, guys. Yeah. So it's understandable there. It's surprising to see that in a movie that in a franchise, not a franchise, in a, well, I guess the DCU technically is a franchise. So like in a universe or a franchise where that just hasn't existed before, because the filmmaker was too, I guess, inept in that quality, or maybe the cinematographer wasn't quite as good as the one used on this. I don't know who the cinematographer is, but
I think anytime you get a director that, you know, just understands like storytelling, and like a really deep sense, like they can work with action elements. Like they can work with, you know, whatever really good talent is coming to the fore. Like they can work with like costuming, and you can just come together, and you know, and then it becomes like you get something that is, you know, basically as a result of all those efforts like put together. Whereas, I mean, with these big production, these big budget movies, there's so many hands involved, and there's so much involved with like financing.
Yeah,
and I think we're starting. Not that it's super recent development, but we're starting to see a lot of that issues with like financing and money causing a lot of stuff in like the game production area.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're seeing like the blockbuster kind of effect. We're like Mass Effect Andromeda for one. You know, and the genuine issues about that, because like some stuff they were talking about, like I'm gonna digress for a second. You know, we're talking about like the facial animations, like the people in charge of like QA there at BioWare, they flagged like facial animations and animations in general as being a possible issue in 2014.
Yeah, well, so I was listening to the plug it. If you're listening to us, you might like them. The Super Best Friend podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was talking about it because they're in Montreal, I think, and they know people who work in the game studios that are up there.
Yeah, I learned about that when they were talking about game prices there, and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
And one of them was even saying, you know, like, that game was pushed to be sold at Christmas because those fixes were done in, like, 6 months. And they're like, that seems like the standard cycle of the game. Like, it was pushed out the door way too early because some marketing guy was like, no, it's got to go out now. And the designer's just like, okay, sure. Okay, we'll just fix it in post, I guess. Yeah.
We'll just patch it out, man. Yeah, you guys can patch it out, right? Yeah, totally. Negative.
Yeah.
So I would seem like a big ham here. But there were a lot of moments, genuinely, where I was watching Wonder Woman, and I was just so happy.
Yeah.
I was just so happy that someone could take a DC property and just do something decent.
Yeah.
Like, make a character that was like a DC character and humanize them to a point, and
despite the fact that she's not human.
Yeah, despite the fact she's not human, that she's amazing. You know, she's this god-level character. And I was just like, it was just like all of the hurt and the pain of the DC universe that's been inflicted upon me as a fan of the characters. You know, it was just like Patty Jenkins was just like, oh, here's this salve for these wounds.
Yeah.
And she just rubbed it over them gently. And
hell, like, they should have given her control over the rest of the franchise. Yeah. Instead of Joss Whedon, he's just going to Whedon it up like he did with the first part of the Marvel franchise.
Yeah, I think they just brought him in, from my understanding, just like write the funny like interaction bits.
Oh, see, I thought that they were, while Snyder was taking a break, which he deserved, like, understandably, he needs some time away.
Yeah.
But so it's not a criticism on him backing out, but my understanding was that Whedon was replacing him as like the
showrunner. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't
I mean, I hope not.
I don't see him wanting. I don't see him wanting that job for one, and two, I don't see, after all that plugging for Geoff Johns to step up to the plate in regards to like a
universe runner. I could see him doing that just because. I don't know. My feeling with Whedon is that he has to get his fingers in all the pies and write stupid jokes. So
yeah, well, I mean, that's what they hired him for. He's a hired gun. Like even before, like listen, even before Zack Snyder had, you know, his family problems that came up that he had to take a break for. My understanding was that he already contacted Whedon beforehand to be like, hey, they did a showing of it to like the execs, like a rough cut of the film.
Yeah.
And the execs were like, hey, we really need like a couple more lighter moments here, like some more character interaction stuff. And so Zack Snyder contacted Whedon about that. He's like, hey, could you write some of those? Like, can you
wait?
Like,
so
write
they
that?
Hired him to do punch up?
Yeah. Just basically like character interaction stuff. He's gonna like,
you can't write movies like that, though. You can't just go, oh, we'll just drop in some funny scenes here. Like, that's ridiculous.
That's what happened to Suicide Squad.
I mean, I know, and I think it suffered because you didn't even finish watching that, did you?
I think I did separately.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so you did it in several sessions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I watched the end of it afterwards.
You can't make movies like that.
It makes it uneven, in tone.
It starts and stops, and then, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, like the bar scene is kind of funny in Suicide Squad, which is probably
You can tell that was added later.
Because even then, like in the middle of it, this like, guys, this doesn't make any sense. This
yeah, it's like what you're bonding now.
I'm not
okay.
gonna go in this bar now. Nobody's doing that. So beforehand, so my understanding though, beforehand that they wrote, Zack Snyder contacted Whedon about that and it's like, hey, we need you to do this, you know. And so then afterwards, like, hey, you're my point man already. And they trust you to handle this.
Yeah.
So he's supposed to keep the same kind of tone though okay. for the film. He's supposed to follow. There's no major plot points, no major action point additions, nothing like that.
Okay.
He's just there to steer it into completion. But like, because they trust him to like, hey, you can finish this shit, right? You know how to do this.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, I was like so moved. I was just like emotionally, I was like on the verge of tears. Not from the movie. I mean, even though the movie had, you know, some really good moments and stuff, but just the fact like, yes, like, someone can do something within this Snyder-fied universe that actually like makes sense and is cohesive.
Yeah.
And like it tells the story from like A to B. So it's awesome.
Okay. Do you have anything else you wanted to?
Oh, nothing other than, yeah, Overwatch has swallowed my life, basically.
Oh, so you've moved from the Switch to Overwatch?
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting on a couple new games for the Switch.
Arms, have you beaten?
Arms should be coming out. Zelda beat, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Zelda's like, there's plenty of exploration and stuff there. I like Overwatch because I get to play socially, but also with my cousin because he has it on PC.
Ah.
And so we can just like play together in a team.
Oh, gotcha.
And I can like talk with him. We talk about the game. And it's just like a good way to like stay in touch.
Yeah, no, my brother and I do that with Diablo 3 on the PS4.
Yeah, exactly. It's just fun.
It's good to multiplay with someone that is not going to call you a piece of shit.
And if they do, it's deserved. They're like, yeah.
No one knows you like family.
I fucked up there. Sorry. So that's really great. The game is really cute, really fun. I think the way they have that game built up, I couldn't imagine a big company like Blizzard doing a game like that with as much popularity as it's had with any less amount of hiccups than they've had. Like the way the game is just formatted is great. Like all the additional content, all the maps and stuff, you just get those. Like they're just included with the original purchase price and you're just paying for like cosmetic stuff. So like cool skins and like emotes and just like wacky stuff. You know, but the basics of the game are all there. There's no pay to win.
When you can unlock those.
You can unlock those. Yes, yeah. You can grind. Yeah, you can totally grind. And they did this thing with like a double XP weekend, which is still going on now.
Which I saw noted somewhere where it's mighty funny that their double XP weekend is the same week that Battleborn.
Yeah.
Battleborn went free to play. I think it's just an extra fuck you to, yeah, to so 2K. Great.
Yeah, they did like a free weekend, I think, like 2 weeks ago, as far as Overwatch. So I think there was like an influx of people that seemed to happen right after that. So yeah, great game, a lot of fun. That's about it for me.
Oh, okay. So I guess first off, let's go with music. I think that's going to be my perennial thing to these podcasts is Taylor Swift's 1989. Now, hear me out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're a Tay-Tay fan or not.
I'm the biggest. I'm eating up that Tay-Tay.
I can't tell if you're being serious or not, though.
Tay-Tay's great.
So I will admit, I do not like any of her other stuff. Her previous songs, like just what I've heard on the radio, like it's just not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So 1989 came out in 2014.
Wow, it's like such a long time.
Right. Wow. When I was looking this up online, I was just like, wow, that came out in 2014. Oh yeah. No.
That lets you know like how big a presence that album had.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So instead of sounding like her older things, it still had that country tinge.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of programmed drums on it, lots of synthesizers, really a new sound for her.
Mm-hmm.
As a songwriter, I think she has matured more, mm-hmm. despite being, what, 28, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, 25 when this came out, I guess.
Yeah. Just as a disclaimer, Zach is wearing his I Love Tay-Tay shirt right now.
No, I'm
the
wearing
big
a,
face.
An RPG Crate shirt.
No.
With dice on it, talking no. about being a geek. But no,
I told him I couldn't lie to the people. Rock the Tay-Tay.
But there's actually a version of this album that's covered track by track by Ryan Adams that
wow.
makes the album into a country album. Like, he plays it with like acoustic guitars and like Telecasters. And
interesting.
It's interesting that it still works like that, which shows me that the songwriter, like her roots as a songwriter are still there.
Yeah. Right?
Well, let's drop in a clip here of Shake It Off. That's probably the best goddamn song on the album. I really like it. I was looking around online just because, like I said, I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan, even though I did really like this album.
The shirt don't lie, Zach.
Well, for a while, I actually wanted to get a Taylor Swift tattoo. It's a silhouette of her like angular haircut with uh-huh. the word "Shake It Off."
Yeah.
Like an old typewriter font. I decided against it because, which I'm glad I did, because like that's aged.
Yeah.
That would no longer be funny.
It would just date you.
It would.
They would find Zach's corpse one day, like 60 years from now, and they would see that tattoo and be like, yeah, we know exactly how old this guy is.
But I don't keep up with celebrity gossip, like I was telling you before we started.
Mm-hmm.
There's apparently a lot of fan speculation that the song Bad Blood is about Katy Perry
mm-hmm.
and how they have beef now because Katy Perry apparently hired some of her tour staff while one of them was in the middle of tour.
Oh, great.
Which, I mean, I'm surprised that their management would or would not have let that happen. Like that just seems a little bit far-fetched, and it sounds like one pop musician's fans sharpening their knives and going after the other pop musician. Like it mm-hmm. doesn't really sound founded, but apparently there's a little tidbit there for you.
Yeah. I mean, you got to, when you have an entire like web forum devoted to an artist, you have to bake up some kind of drama to talk about. Like,
yeah.
Otherwise we just say, that song was good. Yeah. I thought it was good too. It's crickets. You got to make some shit up.
Yeah, you have to have some disagreement and fuel that fan money fire. I also read a couple of books that I think you might be interested in. One of them was Scanner Darkly by Philip K. Dick.
Oh, okay. That got made into a movie?
Yeah, it did. Okay, cool. Richard Linklater did it with like rotoscoping and stuff.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder.
I still want to see that
Robert
movie.
Downey Jr. It's really good. My memory of the book or the movie is not quite so great, but the book is really, really good. Like it's dedicated to a bunch of his friends who were, mm-hmm. were, you know, drug burnouts.
Yeah.
And it really looks at the back and forth, like the back and forth between law enforcement and people who are addicts.
Okay. I mean, with me, like a film, like if it has Keanu Reeves in it, that automatically adds 3 stars. So if it's like a 4-star movie, it becomes a 7-star. And if it's a 7-star, it's a 10 out of 10.
What about Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
That I would say is like a 6. So it becomes like a 9.
Wait, you give me, wait, how large is the scale of these stars?
It's 3 stars. I'm adding 3 stars for Keanu.
Right, but out of what?
What's 1 out of 10?
Wait, so Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure gets 6 stars?
Yeah, I guess I'd say, yeah. But I mean, it for me, a lot of it is, yeah, I'd say 6 stars, yeah. It's a fun movie. I saw it.
No, I know it's a fun movie. I don't know if it's a 6-star movie, though.
I mean, how would you argue it as like an 8 movie or like a 9?
I'm not. I'm arguing it should be lower.
Oh, okay. I get it. You're thinking like a two.
I'm thinking like a two or a three. Okay, and like I said earlier, I like either really, really great movies or really, really shitty movies.
Yeah.
Like, I like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, but
it's
not a great movie.
That was just the hypothetical.
No, okay.
I'd actually have to sit and like think about where I'd want to put it. Just as an example, if it was a six, it would be a nine.
Yeah, I think The Bogus Adventure would probably have to be a three, even with your Keanu curve.
Mm-hmm. Damn. I don't think I've seen... Is that the second one?
It's not good. Yeah, it's where they're playing games against death to avoid...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen
it. And they keep winning, even though they're morons.
Yeah. That's great.
Battleship? I also read... a book called Console Wars, which is supposed to be a movie coming out at some point. By Blake Harris.
Is that what I think it's about?
Well, I'm thinking it'll either be a documentary or a fictionalized version, a streamlined version of events. But the book is based on the back and forth from Sega and Nintendo in the early 90s.
Okay.
Late 80s, early 90s. So mainly it follows around Tom Kalinske, is president of Sega America. I had no idea that Sega Japan was as territorial and adversarial to the Sega of America team.
That really seems like shooting yourself in the foot.
As they were. Yeah, yeah. No, like apparently Sonic's first build was he was Needles the Hedgehog. He was a biker and... He had this girlfriend, like he was the stereotypical badass, you know, he had this huge pompadour, really, really big sharp teeth. And he had this girlfriend that had like her main feature in the book is described as just being her gigantic breasts.
What?
Yeah. It's like the Japanese heard the song Titties and Beer by Frank Zappa and decided to make a game around it. But
this is what Americans like, right?
Big titty girlfriends.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like that's ridiculous that Sega of America was like, no, let's market this up a little bit and make it different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, like I remember some of these ads coming out. Like growing up, I did not have a Super Nintendo. I had a Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
Just because the games were more appealing.
Yeah. They're more whiz bangy. The marketing I think was a little better.
Yeah. Yes, Sega does what Nintendo don't. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and I'd say the biggest appeal for Sega, even for me, like at the time, to think back as like a tiny little gamer, was the fact that there was like a pulpy kind of nature to all their works. Like,
yeah.
You had like when Shinobi would come on there, or like Mortal Kombat. I think I remember playing Dread. The Judge Dredd game on Sega?
Yeah.
They were just, I don't know, just more action, violence,
more
80s
kind
of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you used that as a segue. You must have been reading my notes.
Yeah.
For sure. I kind of forced my wife to watch the Judge Dredd movie. Now, not Dredd, because we've seen that, and she thought it was boring.
It wasn't boring.
I was.
It was a tower defense movie. It was about defending your tower, and it was about slow-mo action scenes.
Yeah, I mean, she summed it up as Judge Dredd being a badass. Like, that...
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. Which, to be fair, I liked Dredd.
Yeah.
I remember really, really liking Judge Dredd, and I think Netflix was getting rid of it, and so I was just kind of trepidatiously like, let's have a 90s movie night. I'll show you this movie from 1995, and you can show me a movie from the 90s, too. And she's like, okay.
That's just the premise he used to get in there.
Ready for her to tear the movie apart and be like, no, we're not going to watch it. But we start watching it, and she's like, this is amazing. This is fantastic. And I have to agree. I think, like, you know, like I said earlier, I like really shitty movies that go off the rails. The ABC robots and the special effects.
The production
effects
for that film is so intense.
So good. The problem is that Sylvester Stallone has to be Sylvester Stallone in it, and so he doesn't show his face at all. Like, the newer version is great, because you never see Judge Dredd's face in the comics.
Yeah.
But he's wearing that helmet, like, maybe 5 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
in Judge Dredd.
Mm-hmm.
Also, she pointed out that Judge Dredd's costume specifically was made by
Versace.
Versace, yes. Yeah. Gianni Versace, which explains the random eagle epaulette that has the chain and looks vaguely sexual, like a dominatrix would wear.
Yeah, and how amazing the costume is.
Yeah.
It's so fabulous, and it's very fashion infused.
Yeah.
It's very Vogue-ish. You could go on a runway with that thing and just twirl it. Maybe take the helmet off.
Yeah.
That would do it. Yeah.
Well, and I guess the last thing I'll talk about, though, is, and you guys won't hear this because you don't know when we're recording these. Haha. Well, except for this one because I gave the date. But we haven't recorded in about a month because my wife and I went on vacation to Dallas to see a dark wave goth music festival called Convergence. And it wasn't the type of music festival where you go out in the middle of a field and have to shit in a porta potty. This was staying in a hotel in downtown Dallas and then walking to the venues that That's they cute. Had because I don't know. I like to shit on a toilet.
He just shits all over the toilet. I've shared hotel rooms with him. Fecal matter everywhere.
Ha ha. I see what you did there.
Yeah, you did it.
But no, the music fans were great. And I think I was telling you this when we got back in, is that this trip really opened my eyes to kind of how shitty Atlanta music fans are. Because if you go to a venue, typically, depending on the band playing and the size of the venue, someone is going to be up front taking up space from someone who wants to see the band, purposely ignoring the band on stage and on their smartphone. When I was writing freelance, I would go to concerts, and this is before smartphones were really a widespread thing, and people would do the same thing, except they would put their backs to the musicians on the stage and have a conversation with someone, just ignoring the music. In Dallas, everyone was excited to see these bands.
Mm-hmm.
It was really refreshing to have people go to something and enjoy being there and want to be there.
Yeah.
And not act like a poser asshole.
Yeah.
Well,
you can't
fun.
You can't be too excited to see the band.
Atlanta fans, it's like, well, then why are you here? You're conspicuously ignoring them.
Yeah. And then, turning your back or on your smartphone, it's just a form of negging for the band.
Yeah.
It makes the band want your attention even more. It's a beautiful setup.
If I were a performer, I would kick someone's phone out of their hand. Oops.
Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't be on your phone right next to the stage, asshole.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't get it. If I want to go, even if if I'm not that interested in the band, I would just leave. I'm just leaving.
Yeah, just leave.
I'm going to go do something else.
Just leave.
Even if someone doesn't know anything about the band, but they're feeling it, just get out of the way.
Well, and in interviews and stuff, kind of the hometown heroes, quote unquote, like Mastodon and the Black Lips and the Coat Hangers, have said in interviews before, the way that they got popular in Atlanta was they got popular in New York or L.A. first. And then Atlanta fans started coming to their shows. Which, mm-hmm. That's really shitty.
Yeah.
That's
crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to be, imported. It's it has to be shipped somewhere else and then imported back to you.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just an Atlanta thing, because, bands in Athens and stuff, their fans turn... I mean, I guess it's probably because there's not a whole... In my few experiences being in Athens, there's not a whole lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably know that it's a smaller town, so you know who's playing, and you're probably friends with someone in the band or at the club or whatever. So you go out and you listen to music and you enjoy it. You don't act like an obnoxious dickhead.
I feel like that's a bigger part of, you talk about that later, but I think Atlanta as having an identity, I feel like that's part of the bigger trouble and issue and kind of development.
Yeah.
Of Atlanta's having its own identity. And yeah, I mean, to foster a band that's from your town, from your area,
Yeah.
Requires like a kind of pride in your area, true. I guess I would say, and like a valuing of things that are homegrown.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, if you don't feel like the place you're in has its own kind of identity and you're not working to establish it or anybody else's, then the true novelty is something that's shipped back to you. Like, that's the something that could have value if it's not something that's homegrown.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could see that, except that, like, you know, Brooklyn and Silver Lake are kind of transplant cities, too. And they're where the hipsters hang out. And those bands get recognition from those people.
You're missing the... I think the one point there is that Brooklyn and other transplant areas have an identity. Like, you think about Brooklyn.
True.
You
that's
think about
true.
An area. Like, it has an identity
fair
there.
Point.
Yeah. Whereas I would feel that as someone who's, like, been in Atlanta for a little bit, you know, from Florida, from coming from there, coming here.
We don't have like quite as many Florida mans running around.
Yeah. And I feel like Atlanta's identity is just, like, this amorphous blob. That's still just kind of, like, crawling out of the ooze. And, like, trying to make its way present itself. I mean, because it's kind of popping out of this southern area and trying to, like, make its way. And it's metropolitan-ish and it's community-based. And you got little spots here and there.
It's very fragmented neighborhood-wise, too. Yeah.
The little Five Points and the Vinings and, you know. And you have cool little things here and there. But I would be hard-pressed to kind of describe Atlanta to someone as like an identity, like as this this thing. Like even if you go to like Brooklyn, and like the little time that I went there when I went to New York, because we stayed at a friend's place in Brooklyn, like you get like a vibe of the area, like walking through. Or New York obviously has a bunch of like big cultural touchstones that, you know, people know about, even if you just have like a little bit of knowledge about it. And I even think of places like Dallas, or I think of places like Austin.
Yeah.
Or I think of places like, even like Quebec, you know, or I think of like Los Angeles, you know.
Yeah.
I can't think of the same thing for Atlanta, except maybe stuff I don't get involved in, you know, like the hip hop scene, or like, you know, now we're moving stuff with like film production and movie production stuff, which to me still feels so new that I couldn't say like, oh, that gives a stamp to Atlanta and what we are, you know, as a place. So,
yeah, that, but that new Hollywood tagline is kind of misleading, because
I think part of its marketing, I'd say.
Yeah, like it's part of the marketing, and I've seen someone who spends a lot of time between LA and Atlanta doing stuff like that get on that I'm friends with on Facebook goes, how's this for Atlanta's new marketing campaign? @LA NTA And it's like, don't, please don't do that. Do not do that. Do not contribute to this, please.
Wow.
I understand there, but, you know, I guess it's cool that Vin Diesel is building a place in Canton now. I don't know if you saw that. He's apparently moving into Canton.
Sure.
Fucking
weird. Yeah, sure.
Supposedly it's because when he was in Atlanta doing Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, he drove out, and even though he's like very recognizable, like he looks like Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
No one made a big fuss about hanging out with him. So he's like, this is cool. Yeah. I'm gonna buy a house out here.
Yeah. When I just need to chill by myself
and do my Vin Diesel-y things.
And post on Instagram. Have my Fury and Fridays.
So yeah, we'll put a pin in that and set it aside and promote synergy and parking lot it and all those other businessy terms, and let's talk about zombies, because we're an hour in now.
Zombies.
And we'll talk about brains and destruction and the post-apocalypse.
Yeah. I think we'll do the touchstones, and we'll cap it off here. So couple things about zombies. I know there's been a lot of material and stuff about them. I did just want to, I guess, make my own personal podcast contribution to the pile. of media around it. Zombies, I think, are a funny thing for me because, like, they first came into prominence, like, in my early teens. You know, when I first saw Dawn of the Dead, and then I hunted out Day of the Dead. And then I hunted out watching Night of the Living Dead. And then I just, like, looked for other kind of, like, zombie-related movies. There's this one that's really kind of shitty. It's like they're all stuck on an island. And, God, I forget what it's called. And, like, the zombies are there. And this, there's this one scene where this lady, she's sticking her hand, like, through this door. And, like, the zombie just, like, bites off her hand. It's just, like, real gore fest kind
of
film.
Are you thinking of House of the Dead?
No. No, it's a real schlocky kind of movie, and I think there's zombies, like, in the water, too, just kind of, like, bobbing around, like, swimming through. Anyways, there's so many zombie films, but anyways.
Well, they're pretty cheap to make.
Yeah.
I mean.
Pretty cheap to make, but the gore was really cool. Like, you see, like, the sinew getting pulled away when she gets bit.
Yeah.
And it's.
Ghost Ship?
No, no. It's an older movie.
Yeah.
Older. For me, having an introduction to zombies like at that young age, I just thought they were a thing. They were just a thing, very cool. And then kind of with Walking Dead coming to prominence, I'd say Zack Snyder's remake kind of started the steam again with Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, which, let me interject, because, and we were talking about this beforehand, I still think it's something that should be said about Zack Snyder. Is he's very good at communicating a lot of information in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because of his music director, or not music director, music video direction and commercial direction. Mm-hmm. Like, his intro to Dawn of the Dead is fantastic.
Yeah.
Watchmen's introduction is fantastic. He just is no good at making big, long movies.
Yeah. And I think that's it, too, like, with even with the original Dawn of the Dead, like, as a film, like, there is, like, dialogue and some talking about different things.
Oh, sure.
But a lot of the impact of that film is just how it translates you the story visually.
Yeah.
Like, visually, you have different scenes, like,
right.
Different sections, different, like, framed camera shots. Like, we were watching the trailer for original Dawn of the Dead where the guy's just like shooting and he's got all these damn zombies behind him and he's shooting out of frame at these zombies I imagine that are in front of him.
Yeah.
And he's just like on the ground and he's just going to get swallowed by them. And that's like, that's a very like visual communication. Like one, it's like, man, that guy's kind of dumb.
I even pointed out, I was like, wow, I know why he got eaten. You're like, why? I was like, because he's not shooting the zombies in front or behind him.
Yeah. You get a lot of stuff like that. Like there's a lot of scenes in Dawn of the Dead, the original by Romero, where like the zombies do just kind of like swallow you up, like just they just kind of like, whoosh, like wash over you, like creep from below or behind and just like overtake you.
Yeah.
And so I think a film like a remake like Dawn of the Dead works really well for Snyder if he gets to communicate a lot of story like visually. Like I know you know that one scene in the remake with Snyder, it sticks in people's memory. It's pretty early in the movie.
Yeah.
Where the guy with like the one arm. Who's actually like a one-armed guy, and he's like running, like he's like running, and then like he turns to see the camera, and you see that he's only got one arm.
Yeah,
and he's just like, there's this Asian guy, and I think he's actually like he has just one arm.
Just one arm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And like he's just like was cast for that part.
Huh.
Or like that beginning scene in the Snyder remake where like they have like the little kid, that comes in, and she's got to fight like the little kid, and she's got to also fight like her. Her beau, her husband, or boyfriend, or whatever.
Yeah.
And just, like, get the impact of that, because it just starts so quick.
Very quiet, and one of the Resident Evil movies stole, like, whole cloth that same scene. But, yeah, no, it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's
you're just like, woo, wow, that's intense.
That is fucking intense.
Yeah, I didn't expect
I remember
that.
Watching that movie in high school, like, in theaters, and nudging my friend and going, what the fuck. I think we were the only two people in that theater though.
Yeah, the adrenaline just goes wah!
Yeah,
so that's great, and I think visually that works out for him. So
yeah,
the, I guess you could really say, like, the commoditization of zombies. Like, how, like, they've been sprinkled, like... There's plenty of, like, iPhone games.
Oh, yeah, zombies are everywhere. I recommended one to you called Oregon Trail, which is like Oregon Trail, except you're in the zombie apocalypse, and you're trying to get across the country.
That's cute. Does it have retro-ish graphics, or is it just
No. It looks like Oregon Trail.
I'd be interested in that.
Yeah.
So I might have to take a look at that. And the commoditization of zombies, but it feels really odd because, to me, zombies have always been... about a particular set of psychological things, at least for me.
Yeah.
And the gore factor is part of, like, their monstrous aspect.
Yeah.
Of them cinema-wise, but it was never really, like, the biggest part of the allure, you know? And
sure.
I feel like with Walking Dead, I'd listen to interviews with, like, Galen Hurd and some of the other showrunner kind of people.
Yeah.
And, like, around, like, season 2, season 3, they would talk about, like, these great, like, set pieces they had. And they're like, oh, wait till you see, like, the zombie in this episode. It's, like, super cool. And, like this one's going to be, like, a well zombie. Or there's going to be, like, one with just, like, he's all fucked up and they're, like, stuck on spikes. And I'm like, so? Like, that's cool. But... one, that zombie is probably going to get taken out of commission pretty early.
Yeah.
And if I want a cool creature, like, I want that to be, like, either a really awesome creature.
Yeah.
But even better than that would be if it had some kind of, like, storyline aspect to it. Like, I don't like, Pyramid Head because he's got a big, giant head. And, wow, look at that giant blade he has. Like, that's cool visually. But if he was a one-off in the Silent Hill game and he lasted 5 fucking minutes, then he got dispatched, it's just a thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't care.
It's just a creature. It's just a monster.
Yeah.
But he's used throughout the game, like, smartly, and there's, like, a whole stuff related to him storyline-wise.
Oh, sure.
That's what makes it cool. And I think with a lot of the new commoditization, new zombie media, like, they're like, oh, yeah, look at this cool, like, kill. Look how the zombie was, like, hanging, and then, like, he, like, greased out of the rope, and his head's kind of, like, hanging off wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's okay. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, it just doesn't do anything for me, you know? Like, the original zombies, like, in Dawn of the Dead, they're just, like, they're barely above, a lot of them are barely above people with, like, face makeup on, you know? Not like the actual, like, gore, but just, like, when you have a big crowd of them, if you look at them, just, like, blue and purple, like, just people, just, like, you know?
See, now this makes me want to go on fanfiction.net and write this elaborate, like, 50-page story about this guy that turns into a zombie, and then, oh, he's the fat guy that's eating intestines and died of the Living Dead.
Exactly. That should be, like, the end of it. You know, and that's just so weird to me. Like, how the visual draw of the zombie has been made, like, the biggest feature and aspect to, like, sell them in storyline, when it's just, like, it's the smallest part. Like, I don't know if you saw The Walking Dead season 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, Bicycle Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that scene where Bicycle Girl works.
Yeah.
Because of, like, the acting and how he just, like, comes in and he's like, man, I'm sorry this happened to you, you know? And then he's just, like, looking at her. She's, like, reaching. Like, he goes, like, the gun is just, like, poof. And he makes that really loud noise, which probably attracted a bunch of zombies, obviously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the fact that he comes back to that, because I think he saw her, like, initially before.
Yeah.
But then he comes back to her because he wants to put her out of her misery.
Yeah.
And so that whole scene works because of, like, I guess kind of the affection that he has to this thing that used to be human. It's not the fact that she's dragging herself on the ground. Like, that's cool visually. But, like, story-wise, that has no punch all by itself, which is what I feel like, I'm sorry, Walking Dead fans, happens a lot with a lot of points of that show.
Yeah. I mean, I think that ultimate market penetration has been reached with the zombie, just because I've met a fair amount of people who otherwise have no interest in horror movies, science fiction, anything like that, who are like the biggest Walking Dead fans. And likewise with Game of Thrones and fantasy. People would never pick up a fantasy novel in a million years,
yeah.
but they like the titties and they like the gore and they like the dragons and the fighting and oh my God, right? And it's the same people that like that like The Walking Dead because of the zombies. They'll say that they like it for the story, but there's very little story in Walking Dead. There's very little character development. There's character de-evolution.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as development. That's just taking aspects away from a character.
Yeah.
Like, that's... I don't know. I've like, you know, my mom loves watching Walking Dead. I have a feeling it's because she likes Norman Reedus. actually, her Mother's Day present this past year was a poster we picked up of him looking all hot with his crossbow at a horror convention at the Days of the Dead, and a little Norman Reedus Funko Pop that we got her at Dragon Con last
year. That's
cute. But yeah, no, like she likes creepy things, but I wouldn't call her a horror movie fan.
Yeah.
So it has that type of draw to people.
There's like a little bit of like storyline in that show, a little bit of drama stuff, but it's like, and then I guess you like shellac it with some zombies. It's like, yeah, this is palatable to a lot of folks. It's a agreeable and attractive enough package, I guess I would say, when you combine all those things together.
Yeah.
But, you know, as someone who saw like the first season and was like really excited about like what they could do next, and then like I could see if Darabont was like, yeah, I want a bigger budget. If he's like, I want to, this did awesome, guys. Give me more money to do the show. And they're like, no, we're not going to spend that much money on this show. Like, what do you think you're doing? This is not one of your Oscar winning movies. Like, this is a fucking television show.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to use, like, After Effects to add in, like, blood headshots. Come on, guys.
Well, there's a story going around that Walking Dead was originally going to be on HBO, but HBO asked them to tone down the violence, and AMC was fine with them doing what they wanted to do. I don't believe that for a second.
I don't either.
Like, that's... That to me, that sounds like the producers of Walking Dead talking up how violent the show is to get more people drawn into it.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think... AMC was probably hungry for some other, you know, things at the time, and they might have shopped it around a bit, and Darabont was like, I want to do this, and HBO might have been like, well, that's kind of untested, you know, we don't really know how that'll work as a drama, maybe they didn't want to put the money into it, there could have been a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
But I was really excited after the first season, and then... Because I thought it hit on a lot of stuff that was cool about zombies. You know, and I thought the show was fun for the first season.
Well, and one of the things that I like in the
even
zombie
like the
genre.
Tank. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, the tank
even
scene.
Like the tank. Like
that was lifted, I think, from the comics.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But it's like, since when has, like, there haven't been cool set pieces like that in the show? Like the four seasons that I invested in watching it.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I've been keeping up with the comics. Like, I think it's, I mean, not issue by issue, but the, when was the last one that came out? I think issue 27 of the trade paperbacks.
Okay.
Or not trade paper, the trades collected editions. Mm-hmm. And the story for the show is kind of following it, but it not really. Like, there are some pretty big divergences with the show, which I've heard Kirkman talk about in the past on different podcasts like the Nerdist and stuff, saying that's what he really likes, is seeing this like what if, because the comic was written in a way where he was just like rushing to get the next issue out the door because he had a deadline. But the show gives him an opportunity to kind of, you know, talk with the writers and be like, wouldn't it be interesting if we would did this with this character? Which, I don't know. I like the first, like, two or three seasons, I think. And then after that, it kind of drops.
Yeah.
Like, right around Woodbury, I think, it kind of plummets.
Yeah. I mean, season one was good. Season two was really painful for me to watch. Season three got a little, had some like higher points. Like the show's just really uneven.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody could really critique me on that. Like it is uneven.
Yeah.
So you'd get like episodes that were a little stronger than others. I don't know. I'd have to really sit down and devote like more time than I reasonably want to kind of really critique that show.
Yeah.
And I probably have to watch it again, which I'm not going to do. That's one little slice of the zombie pie currently.
Well, like we apparently have very different ideas about what makes an entertaining zombie movie. Because we were talking earlier, have you ever read World War Z?
Like I started reading it, but it was like a friend's book, so I didn't get to finish it.
Oh, okay. So I think it's really interesting to have this presumed zombie outbreak, and the author is some unnamed UN reporter taking down information about like where were you when it started happening? What did you see? What is this aspect? And it's a bunch of short stories, really. So the movie is interesting, but I remember being. It has some problems. Like, I don't buy Brad Pitt as a UN investigator. Is one, but so like you know the you've seen it right?
The movie, yes.
Yeah. So you know the scene where he's in the WHO office and he like injects himself with that thing, and the zombie's like.
Yeah.
Like snapping at him. If the mic didn't pick that up, I was biting down, clamping my teeth. It went on way too long. Like,
yeah.
I remember sitting in the theaters, like, I think the night after opening night with my brother watching it, and people in the audience kind of like, like chuckling around it. Like, it's a horror movie. Like, why are there people chuckling during your horror movie?
Yeah.
If you're doing something right.
Yeah, you didn't communicate it correctly, yeah.
So, it's a fun movie. I don't think it's a very deep movie. It's entertaining. I don't think it deserves a sequel.
Yeah. Please, God, no.
I know you hate them. I really like the Resident Evil movies. I was telling you earlier, what I would love is if the Resident Evil movies had a spinoff game created by Platinum. So you're playing as Alice and you're just blowing the shit out of everything, blowing everything up like Bayonetta.
Is that Mila Jovovich? Is that her name? I really, really like Mila Jovovich. I think she's great.
Oh, me too. I think she's awesome.
To do a full report, which I don't want to dredge into it, but Resident Evil 1 is a guilty pleasure. I like Resident Evil 1.
It's actually really good,
I think. It's fun.
For the time. It came out in what, 02?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, visually, like, they do some cool stuff.
Yeah.
You see, like, the Umbrella logo. They're going in ham. It's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just a fun, cheesy little movie. The way they handle, like, some of the zombie and, like, Resident Evil, like, monster stuff is cool. Like, especially when you get to, like, the liquors and stuff going on. They look cool. They look awesome. The little train scene thing near the end. The little pods that, like, these zombie like test subject things are in.
Yeah.
That's all cool. Like I love all that prop stuff. A lot of it's like physical hard prop stuff that they're working with.
Yeah.
Even two was kind of fun.
See, I didn't like two. I liked one. I did not like two. I liked three. The desert world where the entire world has just devolved.
Now three is where they jumped the shark so hard. I was
goddamn ridiculous. There's a part of me that likes it, like that post-apocalyptic Mad Max ish vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Four's okay. Five is just atrocious because I think five is the one where they're in that submarine and they're in the underwater. Recreation of different cities to test out.
You might as well be talking about the night of my conception because I wasn't there. I was not there for that film.
I have not seen Final Chapter, but I'm looking forward to it just to see. You're rolling your eyes and smashing your head.
No, if my eyes could revert back into their head and twist off their tendons, they would.
But again, I want a video game based off a movie, based off a video game, based off a genre of movie.
That would be cool. Yeah, I could see that being a cool game.
And then that Platinum game should have its own spinoff movie. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking like Shut a up. Producer.
No. No. We're getting inverted too many times. I'm going to wake up in the game.
Yeah. You are Alice.
Oh, man. So even like the Alice character is kind of fun. It moves along. Yeah, I kind of initially liked one. I thought one was fun. And then it just... I don't know. It was... like when I got to two, it was really like three. It's like if Resident Evil 6 had been broadcast into my head. Like when I was watching those films, I was like, whoa.
You actually have to play Resident Evil 6 to get the full effect.
Well, from my understanding, like I've seen clips of like play and stuff like that. And yeah. if I'm extrapolating based on my actual game experience of Resident Evil 5 and then seeing what they did with 6, it's like, that's... Because Resident Evil 6 came so much after,
yeah.
I feel like Resident Evil 6 was Resident Evil, the movie, the game.
Yeah, they were trying. I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah, like that's where you got it. Because the movie, in spite of everybody trying to, the franchise to cut into it, it was successful. Like they made money on those films.
Yeah, because they spend like $20 million and they get $200 back.
Yeah.
$200 million is what most movies, now blockbuster movies, spend. Like these would be flops otherwise, but they're popcorn movies. They're great, and I love them, just like I love Baywatch.
No.
But everyone's entitled to like their shitty shit.
I mean, that's cool. I can see why you liked, if I liked one, and then you kept on with the franchise, and there's like parts of it that you liked, I could see why you'd like those, but it just, I can't sit. Like, I can't sit. It's like watching the first Predator versus Alien. That's what it feels like for me. And that's only because of, like, my investment in Resident Evil as, like, a game series. Yeah. And, you know, Resident Evil, I mean, as a game series, it's not super serious. It's silly.
Yeah.
But there is, like, the element of, like, tension and horror.
I don't know. I remember being in, like, elementary, maybe even middle school. Maybe middle school. It definitely wasn't high school, but playing the first and second Resident Evils on PlayStation, and the N64 had a version of Resident Evil 2
that I rented once,
and it was really, really good. But just being, like, you know, having friends sleep over and just, like, try and one-shot it. One setting through the entire game,
which is totally doable. Yeah,
it's doable. It's nerve wracking and terrifying.
Oh yeah,
like at 2 a.m. when you've got to like go downstairs to go to the bathroom because you've drunk like a 2 liter of Coca-Cola, so you can have the energy to stay up. It's terrifying.
Yeah. Like you just be sitting with the game and you hear like da dun, da dun, da 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 da.
Yep.
You know when they actually you're like oh shit.
Yep.
There comes the fucking alligator. God, these controls are shit. I'm trying to run away.
No, I love the forced perspective of the first... I think the first three were the ones with the forced perspective, and then 4 was the over the shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, which the third one was really good, I thought.
I enjoyed it, yeah.
I really liked the Resident Evil remake on... the GameCube, because my brother had a GameCube. That was really fun.
Yeah.
Eternal Darkness was really fun. Although that's more cosmic horror, so we'll talk about that in another podcast probably. But, there's so much variance in the zombie movies. Like, my brother is a huge 28 fan. Like, he loves 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later.
Mm-hmm. So great. 28 Days is a different take on the zombies, and
it's so good and so disorienting because, like, you, like the protagonist, have no idea what's going on just because you wake up with naked Cillian Murphy in your
he's so beautiful.
Yeah, And which may be a fantasy for some people that they didn't realize they had, was waking up next to a naked Cillian Murphy.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And then he's like wandering out and trying to do his thing, and he meets that other character that's there.
And I don't think anyone... Do they have names? It's Jim and I forget the others.
I don't know her
name. The Major.
Yeah.
Which is Doctor Who.
Yeah. And that was cool. And the characters are just fun. There's not a lot of them, you know, initially that you're introduced to. So you get to kind of like play with them and like see them there. And when that other guy, the big dad, comes out with like that body armor stuff that he has, like that police SWAT stuff, he's like, damn, that is a dude.
Yeah.
Do not want to fuck with that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't. You don't want to fuck with
that guy. No, 28 Days Later is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's one that I really hope they never remake, although they probably will.
Yeah. Well, once we get the second wave of zombie nostalgia, we'll do the remake of Zack Snyder's remake. And then after that, we'll come 28 Days.
I wonder what happened to that rich asshole that was on the yacht with those bare-breasted women. I wonder what happened to him. He deserves a spinoff scene.
Yeah.
Man, I should be a producer. God damn.
Yeah. All you need is just access to that easy financing capital.
Right?
Yeah. You can just green light whatever you want.
And I then, wish.
Yeah. And every three, you get like a really big hit that recoups like your other stupid ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all you need.
I would be for it.
So, yeah. I think that's a pretty good touch up on the zombies.
Just is there anything we missed that you didn't? Because this was your topic. So I just did the cursory research and. And
I mean, I'd touch on it kind of end. I mean, for me personally, like I was saying before, like zombies have always had like a particular kind of psychological weight and significance to them. For me, myself, they have to do with, you know, literally just like fear of the other, like fear of the other person.
Yeah.
Fear of society at large. Like being fearful of entering into society. And I would say like as a young person, like moving into society and I guess the competitive nature of growing up and integrating with like a larger culture or trying to decide what kind of person you are and whether, you know, that's going to be received positively, you know, by where you're at. It is like moving into like a zombie apocalypse, like getting out there, trying to survive. Because once you're really out there, it's like there really aren't many safeguards. You know, it's just you got to try to make sure not to fuck up.
Yeah,
and especially with like a film like Dawn of the Dead, the small cast of like of survivors and characters and the tight-knit like familial aspect that they gain through the film. Feels like, you know, you trying to, for me, you know, trying to establish like a family unit and then using that to help protect yourself against the world at large.
Sure.
And the world at large really doesn't, I'd say maybe like a philosophical sense, doesn't really have much interest in protecting like that unit. And you can kind of draw strength. And like, if you know someone, you're like a friend, like, you know, you have like a friend that you bond with and you're with, like, they might not survive the passage through life.
Yeah.
You know, you might lose them. You know, that happens.
Yeah.
And that pressure and that that trepidation of like entering out, of leaving, of like going outside, for me, that was a big psychological component of growing up, of trying to like struggle with surviving, you know, my young youth and my childhood.
Sure.
And I mean, that's to me a lot of what zombies kind of were established and started off with and meant to me, and then all this other stuff with just like schlocky effects and big explosions. It can be fun, but it doesn't really like hit at what I think is a lot of the strong points of a zombie narrative for me, what initially got me into it.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's maybe the only thing I'd add.
I mean, that's interesting. I've never really thought of zombie movies from that perspective. Like, I've always seen them as a form of entertainment. Like, I've never really... Because the things that interested me that are horror-related are... I mean, I like slasher movies, obviously, but were the more cosmic things. Like, I really liked Clark Ashton Smith stories and Stephen King and H.P. Lovecraft, and Hellboy was a comic and movies and stuff that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, zombie stuff was always, you know, Dawn of the Dead and Resident Evil video games. Like, there wasn't any deeper meaning to them for me than that. So it's interesting to hear that kind of association and...
Yeah.
Not idealization. But
yeah. Just kind of like psychological meat, I guess, that I found in a zombie film. Like Dawn of the Dead, that takes place in a, in that shopping mall, area environment. You know, there's a big dig on like commercialism and blah, 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 you know, with that film. Yeah. For me, though, like on top of that, just like going into a mall, like
Did
as a
you
young
think
person.
Of that?
As like a young teen, like that kind of social environment, it was like a zombie apocalypse for me because I had no connection to that environment.
No, I can see
and
that.
It was just a hostile area for me.
Yeah.
And so like going out and I don't know, my grow up was a little weird. So like going out and like venturing and like being in like social circumstances and social situations did have like a strong air of hostility. One of that's just like, I could say the hostile nature, but also too, just like the disconnect that I had from it. Like there wasn't a large level of engagement. So like these like people that were around, like growing up, it felt very detached and it was the only aspect of it was just like a hostile one. Like going into a mall full of just zombies and just trying to survive and kind of move. And then, they have some scenes in Dawn of the Dead where they've cleared out specific zombie areas and they can just go out and they're just enjoy the area and they're just free and it's just them having fun, like going to the gun store or like going to like the clothing area with just like them and their friends and like having fun. And it was like, wow, like that's what I longed for.
Hell is other people.
Yeah. Well, like it's the other people. It's like that mass unknown.
Yeah.
But that small unit experiencing is not only fine, it's comforting. It's reassuring.
Sure.
Like you've gotten together to protect yourself from
the
larger.
The small family. Yeah.
Yeah. The larger indifference that is around you.
Sure.
And so that aspect of it I found so appealing.
Right.
And that was like, there was a real joy on seeing that, like in film. And then, you know, obviously at near the end of the film, that kind of just like degrades. I mean, because the zombies break in, you have people that are also a unit, but they're destructive, come in, you know, break in the defensive, and then you got to escape. Like this was this like your idyllic little playground.
Yeah.
But it's not going to last, you know?
Sure.
So for me, zombies always had that kind of framing story-wise, at least.
Sure,
and that's from
a
real personal kind of perspective, looking into them. And so there's other stories, like 28 Days Later. I'd say for me kind of has a little bit of that as well. Visually, that movie's just fun for different reasons. But that's, you know, growing up, what zombies kind of meant for me as far as a genre.
Yeah. No, they're fun movies. They're fun thought experiments, too. Especially, like you said, Dawn of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think my brother is a lot like you in that I think he feels that same attraction to it because of not really identifying with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I mean, in order for me to do it, like, I had to change. Like, how I came out, like, growing up, like, as a person. Even, like, my later teen years, like 19, 20.
Yeah.
Like, I had to change how I thought and interact and had to, like, venture out in order to, like, connect. Otherwise, I just would have been, like, just this weirdo on the outskirts of society. Some kind of, like, hush dude in, like, a cloistered out, you know, condo with, like, shades on all my windows, like CB Stay radios everywhere. Yeah, just listening to static in the background.
Tin foil lining all of the walls.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, like...
Which, you know, the biggest downside of that is I was reading something that tinfoil actually magnifies listening.
Yeah. That's probably an urban legend that was spread to try to capture them, the ones that know things. Try to get a stronger signal read on them. So, yeah, even like Day of the Dead has that same thing with like the bunker and the guy trying to understand the zombies and humanize them and try to...
Yeah.
Try to make them into test subjects. Yeah, that bunker thing. Protecting yourself, trying to keep yourself away from society. Like, that just made sense to me. Like, even like beyond like a zombie perspective.
Also, I think that Day of the Dead has the one distinction of being a zombie movie, or a horror movie in general, where the military guy is completely... You can associate with him and realize that he's not being an obnoxious asshole.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the zombies dead. Like, he doesn't want them around him.
Yeah. He doesn't want them around him. He is an asshole, but it's... There are a lot of valid reasons there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he doesn't want to test on them. He doesn't want to have them there.
Like, I mean, why bother teaching something that is trying to kill you?
Yeah. And he gets really pissed when he finds out the scientist has been feeding like dead soldiers and dead colleagues and stuff to the zombie to like continue with his testing.
Yeah.
Like, to him, that's sacrilegious. And I mean, he has that guy has emotional problems. And he obviously has like, probably has PTSD developed from the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
So that probably doesn't help things, you know? So it's an interesting take on it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to empathize with the zombie, which, I mean, that's how it's framed.
Well, so I really remember also, again, this is where our tastes diverge, liking the Land of the Dead, just the commentary on walled gardens and the class and wealth divide and... I know, you're grimacing and giving me the side eye.
We're ending the podcast now. We're not giving any plug for that film. That film did have, like, the stuff you talk about was in there, and I was excited about that.
They didn't really go anywhere, yeah, admittedly.
The execution was really bad.
Yeah.
There was that really cool tank, though. Remember that tank thing that they
had?
Oh,
yeah, the little APC?
Yeah.
With all the gadgets and
so
stuff?
That badass.
Was really cool.
And,
but it's the one where the zombies learn how to fire guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Okay. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, I covered everything.
Okay. All right. So next week, let's see. Next week, I changed. I don't want to talk about Gloom anymore.
Okay.
Let's do By the Rights.
By the Rights. What is that?
It's the game that we played at the game night a few weeks ago, where you're a movie producer.
Oh, yeah.
And you're pitching ideas.
Okay.
Yeah. But we'll talk about that next week.
Should do another game of that.
Oh, yeah.
And then definitely. We could talk about some of the movies we made up.
Yeah. Let's do that. Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Maybe we could pick some of our favorite ones, and then we could talk about our movie setups with them. Like, yeah, just kind of milk.
Yes.
Them. Yeah, see?
Yes, let's do that. Yeah.
That's why there's two of us here.
We have an email address,
mm-hmm.
backrowsupershow@gmail.com. After this episode, if anyone is listening out there, let us know which ones you think are the best. You can get in on this game too.
Yeah. Great.
We'll have a running tally of best thing.
Yeah, we'll have a vote, and then we'll futz together a Adobe Flash version, of the film, which might be just 20 seconds of things we make in Paint.
Oh, a trailer, just a trailer. We could take our iPhones out and shoot a fucking trailer.
We could so totally shoot a trailer. Oh god, so
oh
bad.
Man, I hope someone with money is listening and will bankroll a full on fucking movie.
I have Adobe like effects, like I have the video stuff. You could add like fire effects.
Yes.
And like particle effects. Like, I have that stuff.
all of my film ideas are going to include fire or quantum lasers.
We could have the only trailer ever produced where every frame has fire and explosion effects on it. Even if it's just like a talking thing in the background, there's like a fire particle beam thing going off for no reason. Just like psh, 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 psh. Every frame of this film has explosions, fire, destruction.
Fuck you, Michael Bay.
Fuck you, Michael Bay.
We're better than you.
We can do better than your films without even trying.
Yeah.
There's more plot than the entire collection of Transformers
films.
We can
get people off screen trying to sound like Marky Mark and just throw out lines and be like, watch out, guys! Robots, the cars!
Yeah. We could, I mean, if you want to ham it, you could just like record that. And that could just be like some guy talking in the background the entire time.
Oh, let's just rip his lines from trailers. Like in the Transformers movie where his daughter's like, what do you want, daddy? And he's like, I want you to work hard.
Fucking Marky Mark. So great. Good stuff. All right. So that's we'll put some juice together for that.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye. I see I'm too late. Got nothing.